sahanavavatu, sahanau punaktu, sahaviryakaravavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Verse 9. Yeah. Verse 9.
It's only the pages for the
same. Turn it on the other side.
I see it. Yeah.
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yata surya eko pswanekas chalasu.
Yata surya eko pswanekas chalasu.
Stira swapyanandak vibhavya swarupaha.
Stira swapyanandak vibhavya swarupaha.
Chalasu prabhinnasu dhishwevamekaha.
Chalasu prabhinnasu dishwevamekaha.
Sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma.
Sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma.
Yata suryaha ekaha apsu anekaha chalasu. Stirasu api ananvak vibhavya swarupaha. Chalasu prabhinnasu dishu evam ekaha saha nitya upalabdhi swarupaha aham atma. So yata, just as suryaha ekaha, just as the one sun, which is Eka, Surya sun, just as the Surya is Eka, just as the sun is one, Apsu, in the waters which are Anekaha, which are just as the yata suryaha ekaha, just as the sun, which is one, becomes anekaha, many, in the apsu, in the waters, which are chalasu, some of the waters are rippling, moving, you know, like in a body of water that has waves and ripples. So in the moving waters, stirasu, and also in the silent waters. So just as the one sun can be many, in all of these many and varied bodies of water, some are moving, some are rippling, some are agitated, some are very still and quiet. So just as that one sun appears as though many, ananvak vibhavya swarupaha, still its nature, the nature of the sun, even though it's many and varied in all different kinds of forms and shapes in the rippling water and the still water, still, the swarupa, its own swarupa, does not follow along. Ananvak vibhavya swarupa, its swarupa doesn't go along with its reflection. You know? So say it's just as the sun and just abiding there as the sun. The reflection is being so influenced by the water. Right? But the influence or the change of the reflection is not participated in by me. Right? By me, the sun. I don't take on the qualities of the reflection that is really being, maligned a little bit or changed and modified by the source, where it's resting. So he says, like that, chalasu prabhinnasu Deshu. Deshu, these sus and shus are all locative plural. So, deshu, in the buddhis, di is buddhi, means in all of these buddhis, all of these minds, which are prabhinnasu. Prabhinnasu means all of them are separate and different. All of them are divided, separate from each other. 1 minute. Change the situation. Okay. So chalasu, prabhinnasu, dishu, in all of these buddhis, each is separate and different from the other. All of these moving, chala means it's moving, changing. Chala also means kind of agitated, you know, in continual movement. So in all of these buddhis, each different from the other, which are continually changing, he says, in the same manner, just as the sun is not following along with its reflection, right? Similarly, the eka atma, the ekaha, this self that I am, which is changeless consciousness, is also not participating, not following along with all of the changing moods and different types of vrittis and thought modifications that are going on in the buddhi. What's happening in the buddhi is not happening to me. What is happening to the reflection of the sun is not happening to the sun. So as the sun remains free, you know, and remains in its own swarupa, in its own nature without going through any type of modification, in the same way, I also never go through any type of modification, no matter what is going on in my mind or in my emotions or my thoughts or in my perceptions. I am always the nitya upalabdhi swarupa. Remember nitya. Nitya means timeless. Within the creation, there's nothing timeless. There's continual motion, continually change. Sometimes the change is in slow motion. Sometimes it's very, very fast, but it's always in a process of change. So anything in the creation cannot be called nitya. Nitya, it cannot be referred to as nitya in the sense of timeless. It will always be anitya, time-bound. If we use the word nitya at all, it's in the sense of, in a relative sense within the creation. It never has the sense of that which is timeless. It has the sense of that which is going on eternally. You know, so it's a relative nityatvam of something going on eternally. That is so different than timeless. In timeless, I am not going on eternally. I am what I am changelessly. There is no time for me. And so the very being that I am, this conscious being that I am, is the conscious being that I have always been, exactly in the same way, through many, many creations, not just through a long period of time in this creation, through beginningless manifestations of the entire creation. Manifests, it comes into manifestation, is sustained and resolves since beginningless time. I have been the what we call the adhishtana of that, the very basis, timeless basis of that. Not even, we can't even, for me, I can't say, I have been here from beginningless time, because for me there is no time. The creation, when we look at the creation, we can say it is beginningless. It has been manifesting, you know, there's this creation, manifest and sustain, goes in, manifest and sustained, resolves, then this one, then this one, and this one, then this one, then this one, from beginningless time, because there's a beginningless series. So then we can talk about the eternality or the beginningless of the creation. But I can't talk about that from my own standpoint. There is no time at all. And so, now, because of, from the standpoint of the mind, what we call anyonya adhyasa, this adhyasa word is very important. Adhyasa means superimposition. where one thing is superimposed upon another. Like in the rope snake example, the snake is superimposed upon the rope. Right? So when something is superimposed upon another thing, the thing upon which the adhyasa is superimposed, we can call the adhishtana. The adhishtana is what is actually there holding the superimposition. But if something is superimposed, its order of reality is not the same. You don't have the snake laying on top of the rope, right? So it's a different order of reality. Because in fact, in all of these projections that we have, there's always a different order of reality in any type of projection, you know, even though it may seem so real when you're experiencing it. When you see the adhishtana, when you see the thing that is actually there, the superimposed, the thing that is superimposed, goes away. Right? It loses its reality completely. If the superimposition comes out of your own mind, like for instance the rope snake, when you see the rope, the snake goes. It doesn't remain. It has no essential reality at all, you know. And so we experience that easily and often also with our projections also. You know, if you, in psychology, if you have a projection onto somebody, Swamiji used to always use the eyebrow as an example. You know, he is very good at raising that one eyebrow. You know, if somebody, you're looking at them and they kind of look at you and, you know, squint or kind of raise their eyebrow, you know, you really have no idea what's going on in their mind. It could be that they're really interested in what you're saying, like, what are you saying, or, you know, are you kidding? I mean, you can superimpose almost anything on it, right? But unless you know what's really going on with that eyebrow, what's really going on in that person's mind, you know, what happens is what's going on in your mind in reference to raised eyebrows, like maybe your mother or your father or one of your teachers or one of your siblings used to always look like that, and you used to respond to it or react to it in some way. As soon as that eyebrow goes up in that way, that is the emotion, the reality that is drawn forward. And so you are now responding, you are superimposing upon that eyebrow this emotional content. That what was the emotional content that caused the raise of that eyebrow? You know? And so that's what's brought forward. And because your emotions are so real, you know, they're so real, it's not, they're almost more real than your thoughts because they, to you, because they last longer, you know, then that, you're certain because you're certain of your emotion, and the fact is that you did have that emotion, right? But the problem is that you really don't know what caused that raised eyebrow, even though you think you do. You don't really know. However, it did bring about this reaction, and so you feel very positive. In fact, often with these projections, you are so certain, you know, that you have to, if you want to, you have to get a little space from it, you have to say something like this. This is the strength of projection. You have to say something like, even though I'm absolutely certain, you know, that person was feeling that way toward me, or that person, blah, 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 even though I'm absolutely certain of it, I have no doubt at all, still it could be a projection, because I've experienced this certainty before, only to realize it was a projection. Right? Even though I'm certain, that's the thing. It's a very kind of this little part of you holds out this possibility, thank goodness, slight, slim little sliver of possibility. Now, the thing is, when you talk to that person about their raised eyebrow, if you're ever able to do that, like, what were you thinking? You know, your eyebrow went like that, and you're looking at me so funny, what were you thinking? And then the person says something kind of innocuous, like, I don't know, that was really interesting what you were talking about. I think maybe I was just wondering about it. Why? What did I look like? And then all of a sudden, you know, your emotion goes away, and all of the world that you had built up around this situation, just it kind of vanishes, and you're kind of relieved, you know, that you didn't make a big issue out of it or anything. You see, it's clearly a projection. You know, we make tell long stories about the rope snake with this. When the little boy, two boys are walking along a path, and one trips over this snake. He sees a snake. He sees, and he as though heard it rattle, and he feels himself getting bit. And he falls on the ground and is rolling around, knowing he's going to die in 3 minutes. He's got about 3 minutes left to live, and he's just crying and crying and rolling around and mourning. And his friend cannot figure out what's the matter. And he goes and asks, "What's the matter? What's the matter?" He said, "A snake just bit me. That snake, it just bit me, you know." And his friend looks over and he sees this rope lying there, you know. And he says, "I don't think a snake bit you. I think you tripped over a rope." He said, "No, I saw it." He said, "No, wait, you just calm down for a minute. Come here, you know. Come here, let me show you something." So he said, "I've got 1 minute to live, and you want to show me something?" You know. So he brings him over and says, "Is that the snake that you saw?" And the boy looks, you know, and he sees same position, same diameter, same three bends. He even sees the little twig sticking out, you know. And all of a sudden, he sees that what was really there is a rope. And he's sure, because it was in the same place, and it looks same Ben, exactly the same, except it's a rope, not a snake. And the instant he sees the rope, there is no longer any snake, nor is there any affect. There's no snake affect either. There's just huge relief that it wasn't a snake. But the world that he had been living in, that was based upon the snake, is no longer there. But it took seeing the rope. The boy, his friend, could have said, "I promise you that it was a rope, not a snake." It's not enough. He could say, "Are you sure? You're positive? Are you positive it was?" "I am absolutely positive." Still not enough. It might help. It can give hope, you know. But that's not knowledge. Knowledge is, he has to see for himself that, yes, it was a rope. That's knowledge. The other is a belief from what we call a Shrestha Purusha. Purusha or Apta Purusha means Purusha, person that you have confidence in. It's not just some fool or liar or something. It's a solid person that would not joke with me, that I trust. So if he trusted his friend as an Apta Purusha, somebody who was forthright and could know this, that it was really a rope and not a snake, he can feel relief, but it's just not enough. Because you can't be certain, because you yourself, you saw it, you experienced it. Right? And so I have to be able to say that what I saw, what I experienced, what I felt was false. All that I've been feeling, all that I've been worrying about was based upon false data, a false experience. And that's our situation. As jivas, that's our situation, because jivas means, you know, individuals who take yourself to be limited, subject to birth and death, searching the world for your happiness, trying to protect yourself and carve out some sort of a beautiful solid life for yourself, as free as possible from all of the vagaries and insecurities of life and all of the tragedies that life can bring. So you are, and that's what we call samsara, you're taking that on and trying to create a happy, viable life, successful life for yourself. But you have no control over it, really. Very little control over the creation. We do our best, you know, but the creation actually, and all of the karmapalas, all of the possibilities are more than any human being, in fact, can handle. But any country can handle. You know, any any great person, even any Mahatma, can handle, because it's too big. It's Ishwara. There's too many laws involved, and the laws involve a lot more than just your little body here. And so in our experience, from the standpoint of the mind, this anyonya, what we're talking about now is this adhyasa, this superimposition, is what, because of self-ignorance, it's what my mind suffers from. Now, when we say self-ignorance, it can't be total ignorance, because we call total ignorance bliss. Like in deep sleep, there's no problem, there's nobody experiencing anything. Right? So that's fine. It's like if the boys walked along at dusk and they walked past the rope and they never saw it. Total ignorance. No problem at all. The problem is that they're walking along at dusk and that rope is there to be misperceived, right? It has to be there. This is our situation. I am here, present and very pervasive as the very self of the mind. So I am very much here, but the mind does not have self-knowledge in order to be able to differentiate its experience from the self-experience, which in fact is the truth of its being. It has no way to differentiate the satyam, the true existent being that is there, from the mind, which really has much more the reality of the snake, right? The mind is continually changing, right? It's coming and going. It does not bring about any change to your being at all. You remain as the steady me who is there no matter what the mind is doing. I am always present. I'm never being negated. It's kind of like the rope. As ferocious as the snake may be, as frightening as it may be, the rope just remains as the rope. It has done absolutely nothing except being the rope. That's all. My being does absolutely nothing except being me and the very wholeness and beloved nature that I am. I say beloved nature that I am because there's no one more beloved to you than your own being. You know? Everything that you do is for the sake of yourself, you know, so that I can be happy, so I'm protected, so that I am safe, so that I am whatever, you know. So the mind, all the sense data, everything is really, I look at it, sometimes when Upanishad says, everything is pranamin to the self. All of the experiences that we have through the sense organs, they're all being offered to the self, you know. And so my being is here really as the deity. You know, we did that meditation. The deity abiding in this body, mind, sense organs, which all of the sense organs and organs of action really are worshiping. They're really worshiping what? What is it? It's that sacred nature, really, of being whole and complete and loved and full. That's what it is. So this, if you say, that's a really wonderful meditation, maybe we can do it tomorrow, perhaps. The fullness or the wholeness that you are is not something that comes and goes, and it's not something that's ever hidden. Like the sun is never hidden by the clouds. The sun illumines the clouds. And my ananda, what we mean by ananda, it is ever present. That what is most dear is ever present, fully present. But we miss it because we so take it for granted. So now, just for the moment, when I say the word me, or you say the word me, it goes right to you, to your simple little being that you totally take for granted as me. But actually, if you just for a moment let yourself focus on that, the ananda of it, not see what ananda, it sometimes translates as bliss, so it seems so flashy. It's not that. It's that which is the most dear, the most precious. And this, the nature of the simple me that you are, because there's nothing more dear than that. It's nothing more important that's central to absolutely everything. But you have to just sit for a minute, you know, and try to recognize the obvious. The problem, honestly, this is when I said once to Swamiji and we were at that bonfire, I said, Swamiji, this is really simple, isn't it? And I was saying it not because I knew, but because of how he was talking. It's really simple, isn't it? And he said, this is the problem. Your being, it is so much you, you know, is so taken for granted, you know, that you would never think that we're talking about you. And that's what one part of it. The other part is that this me that I am is completely, until you have knowledge, completely identified with your body, mind, sense complex. Completely as one. This is the adhyasa, the superimposition that we're talking about. This kind of superimposition cannot take place without knowledge. You know, the superimposition is full, complete. In fact, it's not just adhyasa, it's what we call anyonya adhyasa. What that means is, anyonya means mutual. It's a mutual superimposition on the part of the mind, not on the part of the self. What is happening, what's happened to us, or beginningless, it's never happened, we're born into this ignorance, this ajnanams, it's beginningless. But all of the thoughts and feelings and emotions of your mind are superimposed onto me, right? So then I become happy, sad, smart, stupid, etc. They're totally superimposed onto me, and so these are my feelings, my attributes, my thoughts, my vrittis, right? Because, and as they change, I change, right? If my thoughts are happy, I'm happy. My thoughts are sad, I'm sad, because they are me. I am my mind. This usually is not questioned, because that's the ahankara is so strong there. I am that. And so I take on to myself all of the qualities that the mind has. Whatever the mind's thinking or feeling, that's what I am, right? And I say it too. I'm so happy, you know. I'm so agitated. Oh, I'm so frustrated. You know, I'm really angry. You know, I really have so much fun. Can't believe, you know, how good I feel. I am taking on, of course, all of these things. And I talk like that about myself, going through all of these different modifications. So I take on every attribute of the mind, every emotion. And then also the mind takes on the reality of myself. It takes on the being that I am. So it becomes an existent entity, me, and I take on all of its qualities and emotions and etc. So this is called mutual superimposition, where the self takes on all of the qualities of the mind and the mind takes on the existence and being of the self. So we have one being here, right? And so what has to happen in this teaching is that this being that is so tenaciously united into one, these two beings, my being and the mithya snake mind, right, need to go through a separation. The two have to be recognized for what they are. You know, the mind has to be allowed to be the mind that is objectified, and the self needs to be recognized as the self. And when we recognize, what do we find is in fact the self never in any way takes on any of the qualities of the mind. Whatever the qualities of the mind, including the changing of the mind, you know, the manifestation and going from waking state to dream state to deep sleep state, all of these qualifications, all of these moods and the emotions that belong to the mind, the self never follows that. It never reflects that. It never changes into that or follows that. It always keeps its own nature. Just like the sun, though it can be illumining and reflecting in all of these different types of bodies of water, it never follows into the, it never follows the reflection. It never becomes that in any way. And I have to recognize that for myself, I never in any way whatsoever go through any type of modification or change, no matter what is going on in my mind, what types of thoughts are there, what types of vrittis, what type of emotions are there. All of those enjoy me. I illumine them. They borrow my existence, just like the rope borrows the existence totally. The snake borrows the existence totally of the rope. In fact, if I were to remove the rope, the snake's finished. It totally borrows the existence and being of the rope, bends of the rope, everything. The mind totally borrows my being. Every thought totally borrows my being. When the thought goes, my being remains. The thought's no longer there. The thought comes into being, it enjoys being, it goes. Another way, the thought comes, or the emotion comes into me, my being, this conscious being that I am. It enjoys me, goes. Right? But I don't go. And I remain exactly the same. From the standpoint for the Ajnani, the one that doesn't have self-knowledge, when this emotion comes, the ignorant Ahankara, because of self-ignorance, says, I am that emotion. But from the standpoint of me, I'm not that emotion, and I never have been. I have never followed the reflection in any way. So I am always the same, whether there's ignorance there or not. Just if there's self-ignorance there and the person says, you know, I am happy or I am sad, that's because of the mutual superimposition caused by ignorance that causes them to say that. Because in reality, you've never been anything but what you are. And even experientially, that is true. Even for the Ajnani, experientially, that is true. But they haven't. They don't have viveka of that experience. What I mean is, whether you have self-knowledge or not, the me that you are, the self that you are, is ever-present in exactly the same way in every single experience. It's just not been discerned. But as soon as it is discerned, that viveka, that discrimination is there, then you say, I've always known this. This has always been me. It's never not been me. How could I have not known this? It's not like a new experience. It's like holding up a mirror to what has always been. And you know that very clearly. That has always been this way. But because of that beginningless ignorance, that discernment had never been made. But once it's made, it's a very obvious thing. That you've known yourself, that you've been this all along, just somehow because of this beginningless ignorance. The wonder that it is, as Shankara says in his Adhyasa Bhasha, it's impossible to even see how on earth this could happen. But there it is. It has happened. Okay. So, here. I am that timeless consciousness, but even though one alone am shining, as one alone am shining all of these different buddhis, myself never following them, never taking on the characteristics of what I'm illumining. That's the condition of Ajnani, and as one who has self-knowledge, and as that becomes clear to you, because your being is so dear to you, what happens is that your mind just settles more and more and more into your own presence. And so, of course, in the mind you become more and more dominant. Even though you see this and you're doing that and talking about this and all of that, still, the precious, silent, changeless being that's not following along with this or that or everything, I simply just abide there in all of my wholeness and fullness. And that's the reality. The mind enjoying me then participates in this world as long as I'm here. As long as the power of the karma is here, then I stay and partake in the world. Okay. Let's do the next verse. Ganachana drishtir ganachana marakam. Ganachana drishtir ganachana marakam. Yatanish prabhamanyate chati mudaha. Yatanish prabhamanyate chati mudaha. Tata buddhavad bhati yo muda drishtehe. Tata buddhavad bhati yo muda drishtehe. Sanityo palabdi swarupo hamatma.
Sanityo palabdi swarupo hamatma.
Gana channa drishtihi. Gana channam arakam. Yata nishprabham manyate cha attimodaha. Tata buddhavad bhati yaha. Muda drishtehe saha nitya upaladhi swarupaha aham atma. So he says, again, yata, just as, ganna chana drishtihi, a person whose vision, whose sight, drishti, is chana, it's covered by the ganna. Ganna are the group of clouds. So gana, this group of clouds, just like a person whose vision is covered by the group of bunch of clouds, he says, gana channam arkam, the arka, the sun, as though gana channam arkam, the sun covered by clouds, yata, just as, nishprabham, without any light, manyate, is considered cha and atimudaha. So it makes sense of it. The atimudaha, the person who is supremely deluded. Muda means deluded. Atimudaha, he's very deluded, extremely confused guy. This atimudaha, whose sight is covered by the dense group of clouds, he thinks, manyate, he thinks that the sun, which is covered by clouds, has lost its light. Right? Person looking up at the sun, his vision, his eyes are covered by the clouds. But what he thinks is, the sun has lost its light. Okay? Tata, similarly, it's like that. That person, muda drishtihi, drishtehe, the whose vision, that one, whose vision, or because his vision is deluded, with his knowledge, he's deluded, muda, he says, that one appears, it would say like this, similarly, that one who I am, this Atma, that is timeless consciousness, I am that one who appears, bhati baddhavad, who appears to be bound. I am that Atma, that timeless Atma, who appears to be bound. Who? By who? By the one whose vision is deluded. Right? Deluded means confused. My vision, I am confused because of ajnanam, because of self-ignorance. Because of self-ignorance, that there is no separation between myself and the ajnanam. I've used this example before, like if I'm, where is your ahankara? Where is the I notion? Does the I land on you, the sun, or does it land on the ahankara? If it lands on the mind, it becomes the ahankara. So say now, you have a cloudy mind, a cloudy, depressed mind, unhappy, sorrowful, depressed mind. Okay. Now you're the ahankara. And there's a jnanam there. So for you, the sun of yourself, right, has now become depressed. It has become dark. It has become depressed. Right? Because all you're seeing is the cloudy mind, which has not been differentiated at all from yourself. Right? And so now you become dark and depressed. That's if your ahankara, the I notion, because of self-ignorance, is landing on that condition. Right? That's mudra drishti. That means my vision is deluded. I'm not clear. There's no viveka there. But what about when the aham lands on me? What about when that viveka, that discrimination is there, and now I recognize myself as someone who is stable and who is always exactly the same, illumining whatever vritti, whatever thought modification, whatever emotion is there. I remain myself, giving my being and consciousness, luminosity to that condition, whatever it is. Then it's totally different. I don't take myself to be that. You know, I'm the witness of that. I'm the one who lights that up. So then there's no problem. But there has to be a shift, and it's quite a shift of identity. The identity, the ignorance-born identity, stays with your body, mind, sense organs in this anyonya adyasa, in this mutual superimposition between myself and the things that I'm aware of, the upadis that I'm aware of. That shift, that ahankara, that ignorance-born I, has got to shift to the self, which is recognized through knowledge. There's no real shift, there's no activity. It's not that the ahankara is running over, oh, let me run over to the self. It's not, isn't that at all. You know, it's that ajnanam is causing this problem, and the only thing that will remove this ajnanam is knowledge, and not intellectual knowledge. It is, I mean, your mind is involved, all right, but it's the knowledge of viveka, where I recognize in my experience that includes both subject and object, I recognize my own being as changeless, as timeless, as never shifting in any way. I see this me that I am is completely stable and never, ever covered at all. And so this is our task. The task is what is being pointed at in all kinds of different ways through the Upanishads, through the teaching, what we do in Nitta Dhyasana to direct your mind to what we see at the time of teaching until your mind goes, ah, you see it, you know. It's not always an immediate ah, don't think aha, don't think it is, because it's unbelievable that the Upanishad could actually be talking about me. The me that I've always known to be me, but that me is so identified with the body, mind, sense organs that somehow the idea that they would really be talking about me doesn't cross your mind somehow. They must be talking about the self, but that self that they're talking about isn't me, because this me is this body, mind, sense organs, and that's the me that really matters. This means that it's the body, mind, sense organs, even though the Upanishads is talking about the self, you know. So in my mind, because it's so unbelievable somehow, there is often a distinction made between the self we think the Upanishads are talking about and the me that is most dear to me. Right? Because I know that I am that. And I am that is what? This body, mind, sense organs me is that. And no matter how wonderful the Atma may be, and how wonderful Brahman may be, and Ishwara may be, it's still not me. And so, you know. So the two have to come together, this what you think the Upanishads are talking about, and this very personal me that is dear to you, because in fact, that is the moment of knowing, when you understand, when you recognize, do you mean me? I remember having a feeling just like that. You mean that they're really talking about me? That this me, that is me, that this me, that it really is me, is Brahman? You know? And then you start kind of experimenting and saying, well, does this me that is me, this body, mind, sense organs me, is it really changeless? And then try to change it. Because now you know it's the body me. And the thing is, just like the clay is the pot, this personal me is the body, but it's also free of the body. That's the part we don't know. You know? This body, mind, sense organs is totally dependent on me for its being, but I am totally free of it. You know? Like the snake is totally 100% dependent on the rope, but from the standpoint of the rope, there's only a rope there. You know, same with clay pot example. There's only clay there. There's not really a pot. You know, the clay is not really pervading the pot or anything. There's only clay there. And here there's only me. But I'm so convinced that this me is the body, mind, sense organs, and that's what I'm talking about. And of course, the Upanishads couldn't be talking about that. You know, they are talking about a self, but not really me. Not the me that I'm attached to. No, it's the me that is you right now that you're attached to. It is that me. And if you can kind of hone in on that me, then say, okay, let's see if that could be true. Can I change it? Try to change it. Can I hide it? Can I put a bag over it? Can I do something to it? Can I cover it in any way? Yeah. What can I do to it? If you can do something to it, I promise you it's not you, it's Mitya. It's Maya. If you can do something to it, it's not you. There's only one thing you can't do anything to. Only one thing. And that's your being. And so that's a good thing, because now you have a test. You know? There's a test. If you can get rid of it, it's not you. If you can't get rid of it, good. That's it. So now listen to the Upanishads talking about you. You know? And then everything starts to fall into place in the most beautiful way. Very personal knowledge. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.